Journalistic excellence in the digital age.
WCVE, Richmond Public Radio. The program is Morning Edition. Andy Foldenauer joins us now from RBC Wealth Management for the Monday morning business news analysis. He's sitting in today for Brian Ford. Good morning, Andy.
Morning, Wayne.
Last week kind of bucked the trend of the quiet dog days of summer. It was a week full of business stories and economic reports that led U.S. stocks apparently to have their worst week since January. In your view, what were some of the main drivers of that?
It was a choppy week where, really a number of events converged to spark the, summer equity pullback that so many have been anticipating for so long. And just a little stat here that over the span of the past, 1,030 days, U.S. stocks have advanced over 75% without a 10% correction or pullback. And this is somewhat unusual, as investors will experience a 10% correction on average once every 300 days or so. So, many are wondering if the 3% decline from last week is the beginning of something bigger. But as for last week, it was really a hodgepodge of issues. First being concerns about peripheral Europe's banking system, where the second largest bank of Portugal reported an almost $5 billion loss for the first half of the year. And, we continue to believe that the European Central Bank will provide a sufficient backstop for the region's banking system. This was evident over the weekend as the ECB in Portugal provided a bailout to this bank. The second issue is the continued fallout from the Russia-Ukraine conflict, and it hit markets in a tangible way for the first time. A number of Europe-based multinational companies warned pressure on Russia's economy could weigh on their sales there. For example, Germany has the tightest trade ties with Russia in the Eurozone, and its stock market fell 4.5% for the week. Bottom line there is it's neither in Russia or Europe's best interest for the sanctions war to escalate much further. Third was Argentina technically defaulting on its debt for the second time in 12 years and failing to strike a deal with creditors. Because Argentina's sovereign debt is not a widely held asset, we don't feel the effects of the most recent default will spill over into global markets. But the news combined with aforementioned events certainly didn't help attitudes or sentiment. Yeah. One last thing, U.S. economic news for the week was actually quite good, with another good jobs report and a strong second quarter report on the health and growth of the economy. But the positive reports actually led to a little more uncertainty with the speculation that the Federal Reserve will have to tighten rates sooner than previously expected for the middle of the year. And with the U.S. and global economy, for that matter, so dependent on Federal Reserve stimulus over the past 5 years, there's always some concern as it gets closer that they will be taking the punch bowl away from the party.
Okay. Well, you briefly mentioned the monthly unemployment report and the second quarter GDP report. Any other details on those that you'd like to discuss?
Sure. The GDP report, which is a measure of the health of the economy, showed strong growth at 4% annual rate in the second quarter, which was better than analysts were expecting, although part of it is making up for the dismal first quarter, where the economy contracted 2% due mainly to the rough winter. The general summary is it was a good sign that the economy is on sound footing and does justify a solid forecast of 3 to 3.5% growth for the second half of the year. As for the job picture, it continues to slowly improve and post solid numbers. Almost 300,000 jobs were added in June and another 200,000 plus jobs here in July. Actually, over the past 6 months, the economy has added 1.5 million jobs, which is marking the strongest 6-month period for hiring since 2006. So, assuming job creation continues at this pace, the next related item to keep an eye on is stronger wage growth. In other words, bigger paychecks for existing workers. So far, the stronger hiring has not yet translated into much of a bump in pay, as over the past 12 months, wages have only risen about 2%, which really isn't enough to surpass inflation. The Federal Reserve and Chairman Janet Yellen are keeping a close eye on this, as they would like to see wages rise faster than inflation so American households will have more buying power. And some analysts believe or debate that once we see stronger wage inflation or paycheck increases, the Fed will then be closer to act on raising interest rates to keep overall inflation in check.
In addition to the mostly positive economic readings that you have referred to, reports out of China the past few weeks have been painting a more positive picture. Mm-hmm. I suppose that is encouraging.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. For the past few years, China's economy has been slowing down from its rapid growth rate as they take on different structural reforms to better balance their economy. And this has been somewhat of a black cloud for investors and analysts with concerns over just how slow things were going to get and how it would trickle over to the rest of the world. You know, recently a measure of Chinese manufacturing jumped to the highest reading in 18 months and signaled that things were expanding, not contracting. And also China's service sector has remained consistently strong throughout the economic adjustment period, which is notable because the sector is China's largest employer. So, you know, the stock indices tied to China have been reflecting economic stabilization as they bottomed in March and really have moved sharply higher lately. You know, with that being said, you know, major shifts within China's economy will continue to take place as it transforms from an export-driven model to a more balanced, domestic-oriented model. But, you know, the positive movement in the manufacturing sector and the underlying strength of the services sector indicate to me that the government's targeted stimulus and reform plans are bearing fruit. You know, bottom line is that the threat of a renewed slowdown in the Chinese economy has diminished meaningfully and poses much less of a risk for equity investors in the global economy.
Mm-hmm. Real quickly, we're running out of time, but I noticed that the top American airlines are making record profits, which is kind of a stark change from a few years back.
Okay. Yeah, it is interesting. You know, American Airlines, United, and Delta all reported record profits in the second quarter, which is a far cry from the bankruptcies and growing pains of major mergers of just a few years, you know, years ago. You know, each of the companies announced share buyback programs or quarterly dividend payments, but I don't think there's any sign or announcement that consumers will see any financial benefits or lower prices. So, you know, just to add perspective, the cost of a domestic round-trip ticket has gone up about $90 in the past 4 years, and I think analysts are saying that the record profits that we've seen from this past quarter shows that people want to pay those higher costs. So maybe if we're lucky, we might see an extra bag of pretzels or peanuts on our next flight.
Okay, thanks to Andy Foldenauer at RBC Wealth Management sitting in today for Brian Ford. The report is not a research recommendation for any particular company and does not provide legal or tax advice.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. The mayor.